Hello, welcome to Faster Horses. This is series 2 of Faster Horses. If you've not heard of series 1, do check it out. There's some great episodes on there. And this series is going to be bigger, better, more exciting, more adventurous, and more random. So in this season, we've mixed it up and we've got 3 regular presenters now. So you've got myself, Paul Wilshaw, you've also got Nick Tomlinson and Mark Sutcliffe. And between the 3 of us, we'll be exploring, with the occasional special guest, everything from UX, UI, technology, front-end development and things in between. In this episode, we're looking at complicated systems. What are complicated systems? How do you tackle those complicated systems? And what are the best ways of doing it? We look at research, design, and all the experience of everything complicated. And later in the show, we've got UX Tombola, where we pick a random subject and look to solve the user experience of that with a bit of wackiness and design thinking.
Outdoor sound.
As handsome as ever.
Don't know how to take that, Mark.
Well, that says more about you than it does about me.
Perfect face for the radio. Right, well. This is an audio format.
I know. Now it's an asthma. I've just made a connection there. ASMR.
ASMR and asthma.
Pronounced phonetically. Maybe there's something in that.
A lot of wheezing. Do an intro whilst we're waiting for Paul. Like a...
Shall I?
Welcome to... Faster Horses. With me... Nick Tomlinson. And of my special...
Oh dear me.
So welcome to Faster Horses. I'm Nick.
And I'm Mark.
Paul will be along shortly, but I thought we'd just get the intro out of the way. So today we're talking about complicated systems. This is a subject that Mark brought to the table. We did a little vote for it on our socials, on my LinkedIn and on the Twitter for the podcast, which is at Faster Horses UX. Go give us a follow. And this was the clear winner. I thought it was going to be something else, actually. I thought it was going to be, is UX an art or a science, which I'm looking forward to talking about another time. But when I went back to check the votes, and this one was a clear winner, so this is what we're talking about today.
I mean, I was subtly surprised that it was a winner, but ultimately, it's one of the things I've been struggling most with in UX at the minute. And I think it's probably the most kind of pressing developmental part. Mick and I had our nuptials back in 1963. It was a frightening time for 2 men to get married. I think it's significant to mention in this month, Pride Month. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank God that's changed.
Happy Pride, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Indeed.
Do you say happy Pride, everyone, or do you say happy Pride, LGBTQ+?
I don't think, speaking as a gay man, I don't think we're here to exclude anyone.
Yeah.
To be honest, we really need all the support we can get. So, yeah, happy Pride, everyone.
I think it should be a happy Pride.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just saying we did a little vote on the socials, on Twitter at Faster Horses UX, and the clear winner was complicated systems. I think a close second was, is UX an art or a science? So I was just saying I'm looking forward to talking about that in future, but that's not today's topic. So, Matt, you brought it to the table, didn't you? What?
I did.
What? Why? Why?
Because it is confusing, lol, basically. I think the way that technology is going and the way that UX is obviously going along with it, the first kind of questions that UX answered seem to be the simpler ones. And I know that's a gross generalisation, but if you were to go on Dribbble, because we love to mention that as a point of reference, or any kind of portfolio work, not all portfolio work obviously, but the most mainstream, you'll find that it's serving specific needs for general users. So that is to say, you might get a Deliveroo type application, which is a specific need, i.e. getting food or groceries delivered to a general user, which is Johnny Green fella who doesn't know what isn't in any kind of specialised domain. He's just got a simple need, and so it's been made as easy as possible and as accessible as possible. But what we're finding, certainly in our fields of work professionally, where we work as UX designers, is that we have the opposite of that, which is very specialised users who have very general goals. So an example would be the software conversation we were having in one of our previous podcasts. We were talking as UX designers, a specialised domain, about software that enabled us to achieve rather broad goals. So when we launch Figma, we might have an end in mind, but realistically, it's not as defined as, say, getting food delivered to your door. So I wanted to bring up the idea of the complex systems that come out of that specialised domain with a general goal, and basically how it differs and what we can do to crack open those complex systems.
So, good points. I think, you know, kind of what is a complex system, and it's kind of like it's quite fundamental that a lot of things are complex systems, but then there's the complex UX problems as well on top of that. So something like specialist software, where you're trying to aim for real hardcore users, is really tricky, and especially when those users use your software for all manner of different things. I suppose a good example of this would be something like an operating system, where you can use an operating system one way and then somebody next to you will use it totally different, have different apps on it, and the whole experience changes 100% for them. And it's kind of how you make those work in a much better way. I'm trying to make this simple. How you make these work for kind of like everybody without diluting the experience for everybody as well. And yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? It's tricky one.
There comes an acknowledgement at the very outset of a approach in a complex bit of kit, a complex software solution, is that with perhaps the exception of something like an operating system, which has a general domain as well as a general kind of purpose within it. I think very often you have software that's specific to a particular field of work, field of operation. So, for example, a geologist's or seismologists, is that the word, will have software to keep accounts of where they measure obviously seismic activity, and likewise biologists will keep track of marine life in their software, but what they then do with that software can be quite non-specific, so they might use it to predict trends and whatnot. So I think in those cases, you're starting off with quite a specific role, and so there comes an acknowledgement at the start that the persona you're dealing with is very specialised. And I think that can get our back up as UX designers, because we're so used to trying to think as universally as possible.
Definitely. I think there's also the growing trend of designing things that there isn't a physical manifestation for. So, for example, artificial intelligence, machine learning, automation, all those kind of things, there isn't actually a real-world physical example you can map that to, or like, you know, and your old-fashioned skeuomorphism, or, you know, the new neomorphism that's the current trend, you know, and it's you can't really map it to a real-world experience, because those things have never existed before, and it's how we deal with those, and that's really... I love a challenge like that, but it's super complex, because, you know, kind of like, I'm not going to do diss anyone. Here's the ice cream van, if you can hear it.
Yeah.
It's
good.
It's good. What do you want?
I'll have pots of sorbet?
God, Mark. It's only a...
It's an ice cream van, Mark.
All right, I'll have three strands of cocaine.
I'll have some dodgy imported Lambert and Butler, please.
Yeah, you can have some of that. Some weed, yep, or a 99
for £1.36. Yeah,
I'll take all three.
I don't know when the last time you brought from an ice cream van, but Jesus, it's not £1.39 anymore.
Oh, I have no frame of reference for that, because I think the last thing that ice cream people want to sell is ice cream.
Yeah, it's got to be the lost leader of the ice cream van, that, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think so, yeah.
Cans of Tango and 25 quid bags of Coke, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Or what's him through the day?
I like when you buy from an ice cream van and it says multi-pack, do not sell separately.
Just raiding Londis for the walkers before the shift starts.
Or when it's in just a different language.
I'll have some of that Axe deodorant spray, please.
Oh, yes.
I totally forgot what I was saying now.
Yeah, I thought
Oh, yes, you're talking about physical mapping. Are you talking about the way layman's interact with it and understand it because they've got no frame of reference for this stuff? Is that what you mean?
Anybody who interacts with it or anything, yeah, kind of like, as designers, we love to put images, illustrations on things. How do you do that without a shitty stock image reference of some bloody 1980s robot reference?
Which tends to just be visual noise at the end, because it's not how digital workers operate. It's not how they're executing tasks at all. So it tends to be a crappy analogy.
But is that not a flow diagram? Is that not a journey map, like a physical representation of a process?
I think very often, and I think that tends to be how they're used. And a journey map might analogically be translated into something more of a physical world map type thing. I've seen that before.
Yeah,
I think the flow map's really good for kind of like, so there's I suppose when you're doing a complex system, there's five levels to a complex system. So you've got all the integration, all the back end, the architecture, the systems part of it. And then that, you know, you need that for some sort of flow into kind of like where that service is in the UI or the UX, where the user has any possible interaction with that, or whether they even do. And then kind of it's all the information and how you present that, you know, think classic dashboards and graph charts. And then you've got your intention based on that. And that's kind of more where your flow diagram, or for us anyway, those flow diagrams come in. And it's what the user wants to do, what's their goal and their broad task, or what they want to do, the decision making on that, that we as UX design people are really concerned about. And that's really tricky with, you know, if it doesn't exist, how do you go about that? How do you liken that to a real world physical problem? You know, kind of e-commerce is pretty nice. I'm not saying it's easy, or I'm not going to do anyone disjustice, but there's loads of data, there's loads of references.
Yeah.
And before e-commerce, we were going to shops. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's the same physical, real-world interaction. But nobody kind of goes and say, oh, I want a robot to do this magical task for me.
I mean, you still refer to that process in analogues, yeah. Don't they? Like, you still have a shopping cart or a basket, yeah. Or whatever.
I think one of the biggest challenges there is that, for UX designers specifically in this context, is that we're all pretty expert at shopping. We're all pretty expert at getting food delivered, ordering a cab, stuff like that.
Not ice cream vans, though.
Not ice cream vans, no, I'm hopeless there. But we can't reasonably be expected as UXers to become experts in the field or the domain that a complex system necessarily operates in. So to explain, you know, we can't expect, if we were working on that seismologist software for measuring, tracking, etc., that kind of thing, we couldn't expect to become seismologists to understand the ins and outs of what needs to work and how it needs to work. And I think that's a huge kind of blocker almost for how we create and develop solutions in this field. Because
do you not think that's a reasonable expectation? I obviously you'd never become an expert, but the nature of someone employing you as a UX designer is that it's your job to go away and essentially learn as much as you as is reasonable to expect, maybe even more so about a process. But like, also, you learn it by osmosis. Well, not osmosis. You learn it from doing like interviews, user interviews, and stuff, don't you?
Absolutely.
Second hand.
I think this is part of it. So I think yes and no. In answer to your question, so I don't think it's reasonable for the seismologist UX job description to say must have been 3 years as a seismologist, recognised and credited, etc., etc. But I do think it's reasonable to expect that UXer to then go on and learn as much as possible about that. I think the point I'm making here is that that's not typical when you're not dealing with a complex system. So it's kind of whilst of course the user research is understanding the very fundamentals of what it is, even the field you're working in, I think is a new problem when you're talking about complex systems.
It kind of I think this is where user research comes into play and talking to those experts who know what they're talking about and kind of partnering. I think I'm going to do a real fanboy Apple moment here, and I was watching the Worldwide Developer Conference last week, and they were talking about like HealthKit and all the kind of things for the iOS SDK and all the health places where Apple really wants to get into, and working with kind of like heart experts on how to measure hearts with your Apple Watch and things like that. So, you know, I think that's kind of partnering up and getting that information and teasing it out and good user research is key to those. And it's sometimes as well, it's understanding the business problem and what that business problem is to solve those points. It's a tricky one, though.
I was just going to say, like, you both made really good points there that made me think, like, it's not about being like a UX designer. It's not about understanding seismology. It's about talking to seismologists and understanding them.
Completely. Nice. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a soundbite for the podcast. an actual lesson.
An actual piece of useful information.
Someone tweet that out right now.
5 episodes in. It is 5, isn't it? Are we on 4? Don't even know how many episodes we've done.
5, 6.
5. This will be the 5th one.
It's just a fever dream, isn't it, at this point? Yeah. Yeah, so that's it, isn't it? That's a UX job in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think what makes it unique in this kind of area is that I think the business that's hiring that UXer needs to understand that as well, because they're going to have to, because it's different from just interviewing 2 or 3 people about how they've used Deliveroo before, for instance. It's about spending more time. I'd say you'd have to spend more time with them, almost buddy up with them if you can, and take on. As much as you can be a UX consultant, you'd need your seismology consultant to help you out as well, so it becomes far more symbiotic, that relationship.
You know what kind of, like, I think of when we talk about this is method acting. So, and I think, you know, you can quite liken UX design to actors, and you have to, if you're going to play a part or kind of like do a UX role, you have to learn that character and that person really, really well to kind of know, you know, how they tick, how they'd react in a certain situation, that then you can ad lib and go off script a little bit and kind of bring it all together really well. And then, you know, if you're lucky, win an Oscar or a design award.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to put it. And that ties into the subject of art versus science really well as well, which we won't get into now. But
yeah, Nick, I know you really want to discuss that one. Oh,
no, yeah.
But this is my subject, so we're talking about what I want to talk about.
But yeah,
this is the book, the problem when you do a vote online. You can't control it.
I don't. Yeah, this is our podcast, not the listeners. The listeners can fuck off.
Fuck the listeners. I mean, why the plural? Come on.
Yeah.
Well, steady on. When I listen to it back, Drew's usually sat next to me, so technically that is correct.
Technically 2 listeners, yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
There's a web show, I think, called
Is that the actual title?
That's the actual name. Sorry, the SEO on it is a nightmare, but it's it's a show by, is it N-U-G-H-H-N-U-H-H-H-H is how it's spelt. And it's a pair of very splendid drag queens who talk about whatever the fuck they want. And at the start, they say,
"I know, yeah, I know, you know, I've seen that, yeah."
They say, "Welcome to where we talk about whatever we want because it's our show, not yours." And nice. I think that's something that we are never going to employ because we've just asked people to choose this topic.
Yeah, but I think we've learned this lesson there.
Though. Yeah, gone out the window. Yeah.
I think the minute, it's a little bit like getting off topic, it's a little bit like my Instagram page, NT Illustrators.
Shameless plug.
Where, like, I literally started it because I was dying inside and just like posted crap I was drawing on there and it did quite well. But the second I started doing things to like that I thought my followers might like, I noticed like a bit of a drop off. I also noticed like me getting less interested in doing it as well, whereas so now I've just kind of, well, I'm not doing it at all now, but when I do it, I just do whatever I want, whether I think people are going to like it or not.
Makes sense.
That's a good idea. Not that you can do that in a complex system, however.
I nicely walked back.
Yeah, thank you. I'll take my payment now and I'll leave. But your customers there. I'm trying desperately to claw this back now. I brought it round, but floundering. But it's because the people you're designing for, their needs are so centred around what they do on a day-to-day basis as opposed to a specific need in one moment. And I think that's a part of it. And I think going back to what we were saying about buddying up and learning what you can, I remember when I was doing a bit of research for this podcast, I was, because I do that, you know, sometimes. Actually, read
no way.
Our subjects. I know. The one point that was made was, I've completely forgotten it. That's good.
I'm sorry.
Just pause and think, and we can just edit that in.
Yeah. Oh, we don't do any editing in the middle. I just leave it to run. So it's whatever balls up we make makes it in the show.
Well, we're going to do it next one, so I'll dive into the middle. I got whatever it was working.
I've remembered
Rock band.
Now.
Right, here we go. Right,
here we go.
Silence. Silence.
Three, two, one.
Back in the room.
Is that you've got to develop a very quick passion for whatever it is you're doing the specialised UX for, the complex system you're approaching. So in this case, you do have to, you know, to extend the seismology example we've run with, you've got to take a sudden, very quick, and very passionate interest in seismology to kind of fuel that learning experience. And that can be a big ask because you don't naturally have an inherent need for anything you're resolving. You're not one of your own users. Whereas I can foresee if you're doing a simpler system, such as food delivery, that's a need that we're all very familiar with. Picking up that passion.
It's the method acting thing again, isn't it?
And yeah.
I think my problem isn't, like, I can be enthused about almost anything for a short amount of time. It's carrying it on for, like, weeks or months or however long, like, a longer project might last. That, you know, like, I could be asked to do a seismology job and I'd probably find that really interesting for a week, maybe two. But if I was working on a very dry seismology app for 6 months, I'd probably not feel so enthused about it by the end of it.
I mean, I don't know, because once you get into those, I love those details though. I think that's key.
I think the thing I really like is the problem solving, and that applies to anything, doesn't it? So it doesn't necessarily, like, it comes to a point actually where you a little bit you kind of lose sight of what even the end product is when you're in the weeds, like actually working on something, you can kind of forget what it is you're doing, which I guess is a problem. Like, it's not something you actually want to be doing. But when you're working on, like, the nitty gritty of the problem solving, you don't need to be thinking about seismology.
Yeah, you
at
can
that
forget.
Moment.
You can forget what the product actually is that you're working on, in a sense,
for a little bit. Yeah.
One thing I've noticed when working on a complex system is it's inherently difficult to map, because you're asking specialized users to do their stuff. So it's difficult to account for the happy path.
Yeah.
You know? And even if, you know, as a place to start, you were to try and delineate what the happy path from A to B is, that's one potential outcome out of whatever it is your seismologist wants to achieve.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned happy paths. Go on, Nick. You first, though.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like, sometimes when you're trying to map an incredibly complicated process, it almost gets to the point where it's just not useful or any less complicated than the thing you're trying to map in the first place. Do you reckon it's always useful to do that? Or do you reckon there's sometimes where you've just got to, like, you feel like you're just going through the motions, doing your due diligence and getting this thing down, and then you're just like, I'll never use that again?
I think it can, that can definitely happen. Due diligence in some form, I think, is important. But, you know, you say, if you try and map everything down, you will be there forever. And you'll be talking about such edge cases, and edge cases within edge cases, and edge cases within edge cases within edge cases, that it won't be useful, because how do you... Then there's an entire piece of prioritization off the back of that. And so I'd say even at this point, there's a question of what minimum viable design would be and identifying that.
Is this where product owners and product managers come in then as well?
Potentially, but that depends, in my opinion, how closely they are aligned to seismologists and the needs of those people.
Well, and UX, I guess, as well. Yeah, because they've got other considerations, haven't they?
Exactly, yeah.
I was going to say, the happy path, though, is quite nice to start from that, because that's your minimum viable product, and that's probably what, you know, you could easily ship with. But then it's adding that flexibility into the complexities, you know, and then mapping those things out.
That's how you simplify it. And God, let me try that again. That's how you simplify it in the first instance, and then work out from the happy path.
I think the point is, with a complex system, is if you simplify to the point where you have a happy path, then you have probably left out features. And we're talking, simply not just like nice to have features as well. You're describing one A to B process within quite a complex.
This is it. This is my question about complicated systems. Is it complicated because it's badly designed in the first place, and it doesn't have to be complicated?
Well, I think everything can be simplified. The quote from Dieter Rams, you know, less but better.
Yeah.
And I think the simplification, but you just have to be slightly careful for who your audience is and kind of, do they want it simplified? So if you're, let's really run with the seismology example.
I just want to say, I've never even spoken to a seismologist. for some reason, that was the first thing I could think about. Rocks. Rocks slamming into each other.
We're going to imagine if we got loads of tweets from seismologists saying it's the easiest job in the world.
Yeah.
all
but then they'd be selling
with the feet
themselves
up.
Out, wouldn't it? Wouldn't they? Like, you know. All of a sudden, 30% pay cut for you, sir.
Are you saying that seismologists? I can't say that word.
We could have picked an easier.
We need to simplify it, don't we, Nick?
Yes, we need to simplify it. We'll call them earthquake hunters,
earthquake boys,
yeah,
and girls,
thank you, yeah,
shaky men,
shaky
and
boys.
Women, wobblers.
Wobbler.
Right. But anyway, yeah, I forgot what my point was.
It was about reducing complexity whilst maintaining functionality.
Again, beautifully,
that's just
done.
What you've done there.
Twice in one episode. Right, I'm done, guys. You wrap this episode up. I'm off for a bath.
Oh, another bean bath. There we go.
Get in there.
20 to 5 on a Friday, bean bath time.
You're exactly right, though. That happy path, though, sometimes if you're too rigid to it, is you don't allow for the flexibility there. So this is I'm always going to mention real world UX stuff, and this comes to my push pull handles. So when you've got like one of those push handles with a handle on, and you push it, you're not giving, that's like taking away flexibility for somebody who, you're always going to think that's a pull one because you're kind of ingrained to doing it when it's got it, you have to put a label on, you know, like a sleeping horse, and you know, kind of like it's sleeping and not dead.
You don't know whether it's asleep or dead.
It's those, like, you have to build in all that flexibility, and I think sometimes what designers, we're all guilty of this in some part, is we like that new and shiny thing and that happy path, and then it's those little details underneath that make it a delight and not just a pain to use. And you know, if you just make that happy path, especially for complex, you know, the wobble people, if you make that happy path, is you know, you don't have that flexibility in.
I feel that if you've got an inherently complex system, one of the identifiers is going to be that you start mapping out a happy path, and then in the middle of it, you've got a block which just says, "User does stuff."
Classic.
User creates thing. User inputs stuff, and it's going to be vague. And I think that's probably one of the problems with trying to map out a complex system, is because you could then look at that and then look at the 16 trillion different things that wobble boys and girls want to achieve within that space. You know, going back to the conversation we had about our software, so where we were the specialized users and we had generalist software, as it were, or we were trying to achieve general goals. Trying to map out a happy path for something like Figma, I think that's going to be nigh on impossible without a huge blob in the middle that says UX designer designed something, or stuff happens here written down.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like Photoshop, you know, Photoshop, when it started, it was such a simple app, and now it's hugely complex. You can do, you know, whatever you want in there. You can make 3D stuff. You can do animation in there.
Do you think that's part of the problem, though, is that they've tried to put too much into Photoshop to keep up with other things that were, like, stealing its lunch?
I think that's a really interesting point, actually, because the key definition for me, which is about from complex systems, which is from NNG, is that it is, what is it they specifically use, complex apps for specialised domains as opposed to generalist apps for everyday domains. And I think one thing that that identifies when you're going too far with your complexity is when you're starting to try and solve problems that actually don't meet the needs of that specialised user.
Or don't exist.
Or indeed, yeah, don't exist for that specialised user. So you end up trying to invent a generalist app for generalist let me try that again. You're trying to develop an application that solves everything for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that example that Paul gave, there's a million things I would look at using to do 3D before I even thought of using Photoshop for it.
I've animated in Photoshop
before. I have, and never again.
Me too.
No, that was excruciating. And that's the kind of compromise you make when you don't establish the boundaries of your complex system, no matter how complex it is. Because, you know, you start to try and force users to do something when your app just isn't built for that.
Yeah, it's animating in Photoshop is mental, because it still wants to use its layers. You've got like layers of stuff, and then on the bottom you've got like moments in time, and you just I can't even describe it. I can't even
square peg round hole, isn't it?
Yeah,
it just literally is.
It's just such a bizarre way to go about like doing things. Just, and then the same people made After Effects, which I just find absolutely bonkers. Yeah, first of all, why have you got both things? And second, why are you doing it so badly in one and like arguably so very well in the other?
This is interesting, because what I'm going to say here, I was going to save for later, but you just reminded me. And it's, if you're working on a complex system, usually that runs across different departments of businesses. And one of the problems as a UX designer you have, the complex systems are built by different departments and different teams. Yeah. And I've been here and working, and, you know, even not centrally located teams, you know, working with people who are in India, in America, and in two different time zones, and they're doing one part over here and one part over there, and that adds complexity into it even more so, that you can become a bit siloed if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And I think This is one of the joys of design systems, though, and the learning those things on design systems. But, you know, a business has to have that vision that you've got to have a layer that sits over it and is almost the dominatrix of that system to make it all work. And I think that's where Photoshop probably fell apart somewhere along the lines.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, like, that point, because that's something I've been struggling with in the past couple of weeks, is things that really should be the same across a product being designed differently in different plugins and different products, just because two different teams have worked on it. And even though we've got like a component library, there are these inconsistencies in two different products that should be doing the same thing in the same way. And that again speaks to like complicated systems, in that it's so complicated to put them together and to keep tabs on them. Like, there's a component that exists, but it only half exists because we only got halfway through creating it before we were pulled in another direction and had to work on something else. And then that component gets put into things when it's not complete. And then two people use that component and go, oh, this isn't complete, I better finish it off. And they finish it off in two different ways and then don't tell each other. And then it just, it just gets completely out of control.
Totally. That's a really tricky situation, and that's tricky for UX people as well, and to solve that problem, or anybody to solve that problem. I'm just going to preach here about hackathons and doing very quick prototypes up front, because you eliminate a lot of these problems along the way. So one of the problems you have with complex systems is you do a lot of thinking before anything's even been made. And because you've put so much time and effort into that thinking, when you come to implement it, it becomes a harder ship to steer in a different direction. And that sometimes is a massive pitfall for any business out there. I'm a massive fan of kind of like, I even set up like a prototyping shop or proto shop.
Proto shop is an incredible name for that.
I know,
Trademark that before this goes live.
Yeah, we'll do.
Speaking of complex system, I've just got an idea for a complex system we can create.
What's it called, Mark?
Oh, it's gone.
Wobblers.
Wobbler shop.
Nick's already on GoDaddy looking for the domain.
Don't get me started on that.
But the proto shop, we just had a time box and like a week was a maximum time we ever spent on anything. And it was, you know, you'd have some very small team just building this prototype, and you'd kind of come across all these pitfalls and all the problems beforehand, before you even do it. And I think sometimes, you know, without that little proto shop, and you just go into, right, we've got to deliver that, we've got to create all the user stories for it, we've got to map that out, we've got to put it on the roadmap, we haven't even kind of like tried to build it yet. So how can you kind of plan out all that with so many unknowns? It's very tricky. But yeah, proto-shopping, that's the future.
Yeah, I love that. I love that name. Right, so we've been going for about 40 minutes. I wanted to just quickly talk about like the good things about working on complicated system, which I have an example of. I'll go ahead with my example. Right, so what I've been thinking about in the past like week or two since we brought this up as a subject is, I'm going to bring this down to my level now. So
okay.
Have you ever watched Dragon Ball?
I have not.
Paul?
A few episodes, not...
I assume kind of... this is a child's cartoon. I say assume, I have heard of it.
Well, if I'm talking about it, it must be a child's cartoon. I don't like the insinuation there.
I shouldn't have had to ask, I apologise. So, I have heard of Dragon Ball, I'm just aware, hyper aware, that it's a child's cartoon.
Yeah, it should be, but... You know, the only people I ever hear talk about are adults. But you know, I don't talk to that many children. So there you go.
Well, there is that. not after the legislation.
They're too busy running around with scissors.
So this is Dragon Ball, right? Not Dragon Ball Z. So that's a distinction I want to make. Don't get those two.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
So in Dragon Ball, right? There's an episode where the training for a tournament.
Go. A seismology tournament.
Yeah. Actually,
I'm just going to the training for a tournament. Isn't that almost every episode?
Yeah.
So you have seen it.
Yeah.
If you've seen any episode of Dragon Ball is better than Dragon Ball Z because it's based on Journey to the West, which is like the old Chinese fable.
Okay.
So it was originally Dragon Ball when it first started. It followed Goku as a kid, and it was essentially like a retelling of Journey to the West, which is about the Monkey King, which is why Goku's got a tail and he flies around on a magic cloud and he's got like a magic staff and stuff. It's like basically ripped from like Journey from the West. Anyway, so Goku and Krillin are training for this tournament, and they're not quite good enough. So the master makes them wear these really really heavy turtle shells. They weigh a ton, so they're already like stronger than normal people anyway, but it makes them wear these really really heavy turtle shells. And at the start of the episode, or when they're doing it, they can barely walk, and by the end of it they continue to train and train and train to the point where they can jump like four times higher than a normal person wearing this turtle shell, and they can punch like four times harder than a normal person.
I see where this is going.
Right. And then at the end of the training, when they're ready, they take the turtle shells off.
Jump and just ping off into the distance, never to be seen again.
Exactly. And they can jump like 20 times higher than a normal person. And that, to me, is how I see working on like really the kind of work that I've been working on, really complicated systems, it's like a trial by fire, like getting thrown into the deep end, working on this incredibly complicated system all day, every day, and then having to do something that's like an e-commerce platform where it's just like buy a thing, put it in the basket, check out. And it's like what, a baptism by fire, like yeah. It's a gladiator camp for doing like basic simple stuff that just becomes like second nature because you've had all this mad shit thrown at you for the past 4 months.
I'd agree because you are forced in a complex system, you're forced to consider new perspectives, you know, establishing the boundaries of what the complex system has, knowing what it doesn't have to do as much as what it does have to do, stripping back things so that they are as simple as possible. I think that's something that's unique to developing for a complex system, is there's a huge onus on removing the noise, removing the fluff, to making it simple. And so I think that if you were in that situation where you're working on a complex system and you remove the proverbial tortoise shell to move to an e-commerce site, you'd probably spot 16 different items, design components, which are just noise immediately because you'd honed that skill set when you were working on a complex system. So I think there are definitely synergies between the two in terms of complex systems for specialised domains or generalised apps for general domains.
Or just knowing things you don't know. You know, like if you're working on different ways of like authentication and things like that. If you don't need to find a different way to authenticate, then you don't know it exists. You know, if you're getting by with capturing people's email addresses or whatever, you don't need to figure out a better way to do it, or like something that's better for conversion or whatever.
I think the other interesting thing to this point is that, you know, you really have to dig in. I've spent all week doing a really complex networking problem. And I've really had to dig into the details, talk to experts, and kind of really understand the problem. And I've just been going through all my designs and annotating every single little detail. What goes on here? Is this a right click? What's in the focus? What's, when you tab into it, what's all these states? And, you know, all the accessibility and stuff around it as well, and things there. And it's all those, but now I kind of really understand the problem a lot more. I'm more confident talking about it. So for me, it's good.
Yeah, it's just that can be a monolithic task in itself, can't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And sometimes, it can be really, it's like pulling teeth at the same time. Especially if it's ethereal.
Right. How long have we been going now?
We've been going 47 minutes.
Not that it matters so much. I just wondered if we wanted to wrap up or not.
Have we said everything we wanted to say?
Well, go on.
The only thing I wanted to add was what's very different from kind of like your e-commerce sites on complex systems is you have users that actually may never interact with the software you're using. So I think what we describe them as cheerleaders. So they've got a vested interest in the outcome of the software, but actually would never use it. But they want to see the output of what it's doing.
Have you got a specific example?
I can provide
go on.
An example of that.
Is this about wobble people as well?
Can I relate it to wobble people?
Wobblers. It was wobblers.
I added a level of complexity on that. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
What is it that's wobbling? Oh, sir.
Well, it's everything, isn't it, Mark?
Yes. So if we're relating it back to wobblers, it would be. I'd argue it probably be outputting reports on trends, for example, and it's that output that then goes off to people who will never touch the software but depend on it to get information.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Or it could be software that runs a pizza maker machine, and like you'd never interact with it, but you'd want the pizza at the end.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. Right, yeah.
Pizza making machine. Do they exist?
Yeah. So.
Boston Robotics, that's probably the first problem they solved.
Will that fit in my kitchen?
It's almost like a dot matrix printer, but with pepperoni.
Does it make the base as well?
I think the bases are pre-made.
Oh, right.
I'm not interested.
Yeah.
They've fallen at the first hurdle there, haven't they?
Really, yeah.
It could be, though.
I'm sure it could.
Yeah. The complexity lies in making a fresh pizza in the dough rather than in topping the pizza, I would argue.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that making a pizza is easy, because making a good pizza is not easy, but someone who can make a pizza can probably do that a lot easier than building a machine to do it would ever cut the time down on, I'm sure.
No. It depends, because you've got how much training, how many tortoise shells does your trainee pizza guy have to wear before he can make the best pizza?
I think there's, having observed people make pizza numerous times before,
and having judged them accordingly.
Yeah,
people making pizza.
I've never made one myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen it.
It looked quite easy, really.
What's the name of the pizza place in Manchester that everyone loves? Rudy's.
Yes.
So I'm going to give a free shout out, free promotion to Rudy's. If you want to send me some free pizzas, I'll give you my address.
I was going to say, you might give them a free shout out. They ain't giving you dick.
But yeah, when you go in Rudy's, they've got really nice seats by where they prepare the pizzas. Mm. And there's the guys who've obviously worked there a while and maybe even trained the other guys. And you can see them like throwing the dough and stuff. And then there's like almost the sort of training wheels version of doing it, where they're doing it in a very different way, but getting like a similar result.
Right, I see.
There's layers to it, but I feel like having a pizza making machine is overcomplicating and creating a complicated system around something that's not all that complicated once you've like spent the time figuring it out in the first place.
The interesting thing about the complex system, though, if we're talking about pizza making as a complex system, then it inherently has to consider the environment the people working there, the people who, their needs and the different, even to the point where you're discussing like the institution and the cultural structures and stuff behind it, which means that if you're going to create a pizza making machine, chances are that software or hardware wouldn't actually make pizzas. It would facilitate the creation of pizzas.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's essentially how Domino's runs, though, isn't it? Like, it's all...
Another shell tell where we're getting jack shit for.
I'm going to bleep that one out because...
you don't want to beep pizza.
Yeah, exactly. They're a huge faceless corporation and franchise. I'm not giving them a free shout out, but I will shout out Rudy's Manchester. So that's all partially automated, isn't it? And it's all, you know, like laid out like an assembly line. But I think we're almost treading on the territory of automation versus artisan there, aren't we?
When you're thinking about, say, to continue with pizza making as a complex system, then you're no longer thinking about how you can replace the people doing that job and simplify it and strip it back and turn it into A to B. What you're thinking about is how can you facilitate those pizza makers so that they don't have to think about how they make the pizza. They can focus on what they're making, new ideas around pizza making, getting it out there, removing any friction, stuff like that, as opposed to stripping it all out and, as you say, automating it to the point where you push a button and you get one type of pizza that is made to one type of specification, which is arguably, obviously, the simplification of that.
It's interesting that we've stumbled onto talking about pizza and Domino's because they'd recently got sued and fined, didn't they, for their app?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not
Domino's
entirely familiar with this.
Domino's versus Robles.
Oh, yeah. What's the story
or Robles versus
for,
Domino's.
Definitely not for me, for our users.
So that that app anyway is crap and the pizza tracker is crap. But it was based on that accessibility. Well, a smiley face.
Perhaps that's why it's crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a story for another time.
There is, yeah.
But yeah, it's an accessibility thing, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought
as
much. But I understood it was an accessibility issue. What about it was inaccessible?
So, Mr. Robles, apologies if I pronounced your name wrong.
Like he's going to be fucking listening to
me. It's because he's got a search term on Domino's versus Robles, so it just pops in his stream. So.
Mr. Wobbles.
The seismologist.
Yeah, bloody seismologist. Oh, well, he would be if it wasn't so bloody complex.
Yeah.
he took Domino's to court because he couldn't order a pizza because he was blind and he just couldn't use their app. And it just failed him miserably. And their rebuttal, Domino's, was, he could have phoned up. That's not the response. Yeah, it's not the response you want. And I think some analysts somewhere that said it would have cost them about $35,000 to fix the app, at a push. And they went into the High Court and lost. So,
quite right.
Strapped for cash, Domino's.
I was
going
to say, because they couldn't spend $35,000 on... Because they can't be asked to spend that, every blind person who wants a Domino's pizza has to ring up.
Has to rely on
systems that aren't provided by Domino's to get a Domino's.
I think that's the definition of hubris.
But why, if it's easier to ring up, why have an app?
Well, that's it, isn't it? That's exactly the question.
Why?
Because everyone else has got an app.
Yep.
That's why they've got an app.
But it's also not easier to ring up.
It isn't. And
it's certainly not the easiest
orders.
Solution for someone with a visibility-based accessibility need.
Yeah.
Is it? You know.
Not at all. Yeah. They also sent a leaflet menu out to him. Oh my god.
Oh, thanks.
I'm just making up.
Straight up believed you there. I'm not going to lie.
The fucking lawyers get on me.
Christ. Fucking hell.
Right.
100% a joke. Yes.
Our lawyers have been in touch and they've informed us that we have to state that that was a joke.
In fact, a joke.
it only took place in Paul's imagination.
Yeah, and so the real discrimination against people with a visual-based accessibility needs was limited to Domino's saying, you should have just rang up, mate.
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Can you not see the buttons on the phone? Oh, wait.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, my granddad had a partially sighted telephone. And
I think you'll find that.
You are?
We're both making the same joke here. I think you'll find, Nick, that all telephones are at least partially sighted. Most of them,
unless they've got a camera on.
What do you mean?
You said partially sighted telephone, which sounded as if it was a telephone that couldn't see.
Was it? I think you're being overly pedantic there. It was a telephone intended for people who were partially sighted.
Yeah, no, we got that. We were just we got it. Yeah.
You wanted me to say my grandfather had a telephone that was intended for use by people who were partially sighted. We've only got fucking an hour to get this recorded. Talking about complicated systems, right?
I love it.
And yeah, it had. Do you know what? I'm not even going to tell this story anymore because it's not funny.
Or
poignant. It had, basically, it had massive numbers on it.
Right, okay. I tell you what was funnier than that, you throwing your toys at the prom, didn't you? I'm incredibly satisfied with that output there.
So, UX Tombola now.
Oh, well, shall we summarise? Because
yeah,
I think we've actually come up with a few.
Do we have to summarise?
Yeah, we do. Well, okay,
tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them what you told them.
And we might come out with a few other ideas. So that one of the first points we made was...
Before you summarise, Mark, you... So I got loads of feedback from saying people listen to things like 1.5 times speed, 2 times speed. Right. So you say it really fast to fuck those people over.
Okay, cool. Are you ready? Become passionate about a specific domain and body up with your users to create synergistic relationships and research. Navigate complex systems is extremely difficult. Establish the boundaries of your complex system. Know what problems you're trying to solve. Sometimes one size won't fit all. Design systems will help you design for complexity and scalability. Complex systems often span multiple departments and specialization within the same user base. Prototyping quickly can help identify and eliminate problems early on. Thinking too much about your solution can make changing... I had no idea I could do this, by the way.
I know. Mark, you've just auditioned for small print on every single advert.
Absolutely. Absolutely amazing. I think we need to get in touch with... I think you might have found like a Guinness World Record talent.
Okay, friends. Now I'll do it properly. To summarise then, becoming passionate about that specific domain you're in and buddying up with your users, your targeted users, can help to create a synergistic relationship between the person you're designing for and them teaching you about that specialised field. And it can help with research as well. So on top of that, mapping out complex systems is extremely difficult. So maybe don't try and tackle it all at once. Prototyping quickly can help you identify and eliminate problems early on. But also bear in mind that thinking too much about your solution can make changing direction and responding to new information difficult. Establish the boundaries of your complex system. So know what's problems you're trying to solve, what's part of your complex system, and what actually is you trying to solve everything at once, which is, I think, something we slip into as UX designers. Bear in mind that a design system will help you design for complexity and scalability. Have we already done a podcast on that?
Scalability and accessibility?
No, design systems.
No?
We've not done scalability.
Not specific. We should do... Is UX an art or a science?
Oh, that's a new one, that, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah. Let's put it to a social media vote.
Or Because if anyone's still listening, they probably already are on our Patreon. You can go to our Patreon to access premium content, such as voting on our next podcast.
Oh, Mark, I'm going to have to set that up now before we release this episode.
Oh, no, it's fine. No one's actually going to donate to this bollocks,
are they? My mum might. Oh, actually, speaking of my mum, we were driving back from Wales last week, and we were listening to some music, and no one was really paying attention. So I turned to my mum, and I was like, oh, mum, do you want to listen to my podcast? And she just looked me dead in the eyes and just went, no.
I love the upwards inflection at the end of that. As if to say, son, who do you think I am?
Who the fuck?
If you weren't driving this car, I'd tell you to get out.
Poke you in the eye.
Yeah. Nick, I already listened to you more than enough.
So to continue with the summary, we're nearly there now, boys. Complex systems often span multiple departments and specializations within the same user base, and designing complex systems provides alternative perspectives that will carry on through your UX career and often help you create arguably less complex applications because of those alternative perspectives. So there you go. If you weren't making notes throughout, there are your notes.
There you go. Cool. And Mark's going to type those up and tweet them so that you can have them for reference.
I think they already are typed up, dear. How do you think I managed to ring it off so quickly? I don't think as fast as I was speaking that first time. That's why I don't speak that quickly usually.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm the complete opposite of that. UX Tombola. Mark, do you want to do the honours and wheel it in?
Yeah. I'll just open the door. Door noise here.
Is Giles back, by the way? Or is it Giles?
No, well,
cobbler update.
Yeah. He is back, but still need the heels doing on my shoes. So
oh my goodness.
What's he been doing?
Fuck knows. He's obviously left half of himself over wherever he was vacationing. So I'm going to get some heels and I'm going to lob them at him when he comes through the... Well, he actually tends to take the dumbwaiter up. He's got some strange habits, Giles.
Wobblers before cobblers, I say.
I think so. Well, is Giles' wife is the...
The wobbler of the family.
Yeah, she's the in-house seismologist. Our estate, it's on a fault line, so we need to be prepared.
Right.
Okay.
Someone give it a spin?
Yeah. Here we go.
I'll let you, my arm's still dodgy.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. There we go, spinning now. Have we got a theme tune for this? Do you want to sing a theme tune?
It's UX Tombola. Watch out for your shoes. We'll give it a spin. And...
What shall we choose?
Yes!
Teamwork! Well done.
Right,
hang on. I'll do that off the top again.
No, put that right as it was.
Okay.
Yeah, then you're just going to cut Mark out.
Mark's saving the day. Right, so the one we've got today is like kind of on a bit of a theme because it's a garden broom.
Bloody hell. What the fuck is wrong with
spin it again. Let's get something else.
Getting a twofer out of this.
Three for three on gardening.
I know, yeah.
Watch it be a regular broom.
It's gardened. No, it's not. It's personal finances.
Oh.
What? Oh, man.
Giles.
This is...
That's who this I used to do my personal finances. In fact,
going out on a high here, aren't we?
I know, yeah. I was reading an article yesterday on personal finances.
Oh, God, is it that bad?
I know, that's how I roll. That's how my exciting life. That's what happens. When you have kids, that's, kind of like
that's
your
how
peaks.
You get your kicks.
I imagine what might have happened there is you've opened your bank account, you've gone, shit. How do I solve this problem?
Yeah.
Typed it into Google and read three articles to become an immediate internet expert on it.
Well, So this actually was, it's about having six bank accounts.
Was that the advice?
Seems excessive.
That was problem they were solving.
That was the advice, and it's to solve problems of your personal finances.
How many of those bank accounts are based offshore?
Four. They're all bank accounts, and it's basically like pots of money. So you have one for bills.
Oh yeah.
One for food. One for partying and other stuff, and it's basically so. And then savings and emergency funds and something else. I didn't read it too closely. I think that's a great idea, though.
Yeah,
providing a bank will let you have six bank accounts.
You have to go with different providers.
I've got a Monzo account and it has pots in it. So I've a lot of pots. I'm just opening up my app now to see how many I've actually got, because I've got a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if I've got six. So I've got... You've got like your standard account, which is, you know, your current account.
Yep.
And then I've got a pot for that I call house, which is like savings to go towards a house. Mm-hmm. I've got another pot which I put all my things that I sell in Etsy in, so I can keep track of what I'm making on Etsy. I've got another one for eBay, which is exactly the same thing for eBay, but I don't use eBay these days because it's crap. I've got a roundup pot, so another good thing that Monzo does is you can flick on this thing called Roundup, and if you spend anything that's less than a pound, it takes what would make that transaction a full pound and puts it in your roundup pot. So if you
spend £10, 12p,
yeah,
it puts in 80...
Quick maths.
88p
into the roundup pot, and you'd be surprised how quickly that adds up to like real money. I've got a bills pot, so I put...
Who's Bill?
Bill is...
Is that your cobbler?
Is my cobbler, yeah.
It's Giles' half-brother.
He doesn't get very much... He's not so much a cobbler as and the man who cleans my Yeezys.
Right.
Okay.
I'm now in... You said he doesn't get round, so now I'm... It's like, I'm just imagining a hunchback gentleman of indefinite
a tiny hunchback
ancient years with a toothbrush on your Yeezys.
Yeah. Very, very, very. I don't get my Yeezys caked in mud. I'm not rolling in money.
Shoes are meant to be destroyed.
No, not these ones.
Yeah.
They're made out of suede, very soft suede.
Oh,
so I only wear them when I've had assurances that it's not going to rain.
Yeah, well, my brother's like that with his suede shoes. I think it's good advice in general. I just wear them in any old thing. I've been up mountains in dress shoes.
Yeah, you're a maniac.
This is true. Giles was livid.
Anyway, back to Bill. So his salary goes in there. So which technically is classed as a bill. So what I do is it tells you how much is to go from your bills pot. You send all your direct debits and stuff to this pot. You put that amount of money in there, and then that comes out separately to like your spends in your current account.
Yeah.
So that money's already accounted for, and technically you shouldn't go overdrawn, even though I do a little bit.
That's really interesting because one of the UX problems I was going to raise, linked to personal finances, is setting up the dates that things come out.
Yeah.
And that kind of cuts through all that crap, because I had my Spotify was coming out on something like the 26th, it was something like the 7th, and I wanted it to come out on the 1st. And I looked at that. I looked it up to see if there was any way I could change the direct debit. Maybe I have to pay a bit more or to make up the difference or something. Absolutely not. I have to cancel any Spotify I have, not listen to Spotify Premium for that duration, and then resubscribe when I presumably remember on my new date, so the 1st or the 2nd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they won't let you just...
That's rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there are quite a few services like that.
I've been doing that for years, kind of like I've got my bills pot, and then as soon as I get paid, I transfer all my bills money and a little bit more into the bills pot.
You've got a Yeezy cleaner as well then?
Yeah, yeah. And then I just don't have to worry about it. Just in between cutting the curtains and
something to polish your Yeezys with.
Yeah. And I always think with personal finances, if you can see what you've got, you kind of spend it, or you mentally spend it before you've even got it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
That's why I like to keep all my like Etsy and eBay money separate. In fact, yeah. I used to just keep all my money in PayPal and just forget that it's there. But Etsy stopped using PayPal. I think eBay have actually stopped using PayPal now as well. And they just pay it directly in your account, which is like, I don't want that. I don't want my money in my account. I want
I'm
hidden.
The exact opposite. I prefer as few middle people as possible when it comes to that, to the point where I'm not a fan of eBay because or PayPal, because I'd rather get it directly from whoever or wherever I'm getting, you know, getting the money from.
Yeah, no, I want to know. I want to see, because in my head I keep it as different things. If I'm making money off Etsy, then I pay for the cost of the things on Etsy out of that money, because it's like a self-sustaining thing. But also I need to know at the end of the month, like, where, what that amount was, and then I can spend that money against something as like a treat for making it, kind of thing.
Totally.
Whereas if I put it in my main pot of money, it just disappears into the rest of the money.
What's your Etsy shop called?
I think that's
a promo.
I think that's just called NT Illustrators now. It was probably called something else before, but yeah, it's
SEO optimization.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's just like the prints that I sell on my website.
Optimization. I just said PIN number.
What?
Search. I said SEO optimization, which is search engine optimization.
Oh. I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Nick. You didn't even realise.
I didn't, because I don't know what SEO means. There's a really good video online of Frank Abagnale Jr., you know, the guy that they made Catch Me If You Can about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he says, like, what? Don't spend your own money. Basically, have an account with your money in it and use credit to buy everything, and then at the end of the month, pay your credit card off with the money from your account. Because if you're spending your money, then that amount, no matter how large or small, should be earning interest. So if you leave it in your account till the end of the month, it's earning that little bit more interest than if you pay for it on credit and then pay it. No, wait. Then if you use cash.
Yeah.
And also it increases your credit score as well.
Yeah, of course, you've got to be mindful of the interest rates on your credit as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got, so, you know, there's entire websites and stuff set up to dealing with stuff like that, like Money Expert and stuff. But
careers set up to help.
Yeah, yeah. Well, accounting. Like that Martin, whatever his name is. But
that fella, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the guy who owns Money Saving Expert website. Or Money Expert.
I assumed he was a wobbler.
He's not a wobbler, he's a wibbler.
That's very different.
But yeah, you get credit cards that have 0% finance for like 23, 24 months. You buy stuff on them, you pay it off by the time that comes up, and then it's like a free loan, basically.
So are we actually solving any UX problems?
I mean, that is a UX. I mean, Monzo is a UX solution to banking.
It is, because it's, I've noticed that there's a scale, isn't there, really? On one side, it's the amount of dev time you put in makes it easier for the user. On the other side, the less dev time you put in makes it easier for the developer and more complex for the user. And I feel that's exactly what's gone on there. And Monzo's just come in and, you know, solving problems.
When Monzo first started, I saw this beautiful thing on LinkedIn where someone I know knew someone who worked for, like, Barclays, or I don't know what bank it was. Barclays was just the one that came to mind first. Yeah. In fact, I don't think it was them. I think it was someone else. And this person was complaining that Monzo had come into the space and, like, was starting to take their customers. And they had such a poor appreciation for what Monzo were doing that they associated it to having a nice pink credit card. And they were oh, Monzo coming into the space and everyone's getting Monzo now because you get a nice pink credit card. And it was being a customer of Monzo at the time was like, this is why you're failing, because Monzo is has a really nice interface. It's putting the user first. At the time, they've rolled it back now, but at the time, you could literally just tap chat and ask a person questions and get answers within about 10 minutes without having to ring anyone or go to the website or anything. It's all done in the app. You could send other people who use Monzo money instantly. You could do it by their phone number. And it's all real time as well. So if you send or receive a payment in Monzo, it happens instantly, whereas like banks take like 3 days to do exactly the same thing.
Well, they used to.
Yeah, well, do they not?
A lot of work on.
Yeah, so they so that is a thing that gave the entire banking industry a kick up the arse, then, isn't it?
And it has done as well.
Challenger banks.
Yeah.
Well, with that in mind, then I want to know what would the Mark, Nick, Paul bank look like, and how would it operate?
Oh, God, I wouldn't give us a fucking cent.
Oh, this is a complex system in itself.
Yeah. Just straight off the bat.
Yeah. Oh, it's tricky. You know what? You know, one of the things I like is... we introduced something at Barclays when I worked there, and it was a dent in the credit card so that...
Oh, yeah.
Visual sighted people knew which way to insert their card into a machine.
See, someone used their card in front of me the other day, and it had a little indent on the bottom of it cut out. And I literally asked them, "What's that dent for?" And they were like, "Oh, I've no idea." And I thought it was to push it in with, you know, you put your finger just at the bottom of the card as you push it into the machine. But it never even occurred to me that it was for partially sighted people to know that they had the card the right way up. Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, because otherwise you're trying 4 different ways before you get the right one.
Or you're relying on like feeling the numbers on the front or whatever.
They introduced that. That's something similar with USBs, didn't they? Because USBs only ever go in the third way.
USBs have a third state that's only uncovered by trying it both ways.
And frustratingly, on Windows machines, it was always upside down, the USB. So if you go from like a Mac to a PC, you always had to kind of flip the wire over. That was, and the amount of times I'm just going like, trying to shove it in. Yeah. You have to have the, I did a visual motion there, which was rubbish on a podcast, wasn't it?
Put it on Twitter, it's fine.
Yeah, okay.
Do a little GIF of yourself.
But what would the UX solution be of a bank? I think we should call it pots of gold. Pots,
yeah.
I'm gonna throw a cat amongst the pigeons and say faster horses coin.
It's a global Bitcoin.
You said pots, Paul. But yeah. I'm thinking pockets. I'm thinking pockets of money. Because what I'm thinking is, I always have, because I wear 3-piece suits all the time, always have about 40,000 pockets at any given time, and that's a different UX tombola. But if I want to keep my money in different pots, I don't want to carry around pots. So why don't I put my money in different pockets?
Can do. Just make sure they don't have that hole in, the one...
No, those are my Sunday trousers.
Oh God, I've got some sort of mental image. Yeah,
I realise probably should have chosen any other day of the week than the Lord's Day.
You're in church with your whole list of pockets.
I'm going to get a very strongly worded letter, aren't I? Now?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think maybe what we do is we introduce faster horses coin, FHC, as our currency, which has a ratio of 1-to-1 with pound sterling, but presents it in far more carryable tokens for my pockets.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I like it.
I think technically that this applies, but old... China, maybe even current money. I've never been to China, I don't know. But old Chinese money used to have a hole through the middle.
Yeah.
So you could attach it to a string. and carry it or like wear it as a bracelet or whatever. That's a UX solution to financial personal finances.
And it's also a UX solution to you like pockets.
Yeah.
I was just thinking the whole wearing your money as a bracelet is also a UX solution for those who want to steal money as well.
Or accidentally drown,
yeah, when they fall into a canal or a particularly deep
puddle. It's either live and lose all your money or drown rich.
There's our second sound bite.
I feel like you've considered this before.
Yeah.
Keeps me awake at night.
The UX of murder.
All the Chinese millionaires that have drowned.
I think that's the other problem, isn't it, as well? Because there's very much an upper limit related to your physicality of how much coinage you can carry about. I suppose in general.
I guess that's why they invented paper money, isn't it?
I'm going to put a bit of a
shit shine on this.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because I think we've generally, especially through the pandemic, nobody's using bloody money anymore.
Oh, so I was thinking about this the other day. Am I right in thinking that actually, physical cash now has it's flipped and that's become credit? So I was thinking about I was on holiday with my parents, right, and they insist on paying cash for everything, even though the card that they use to get cash out of the machine they can use in the shop to pay for the thing, right?
But
so my dad got some money out and I paid for something, so he gave me, let's say, 10 quid. Right, I put that 10 quid
in your pocket money.
I put that 10 quid. So I paid on my card, and then he gave me £10 the cash to pay back. Okay. Later on, my sister paid for something on card, and I couldn't be asked carrying this cash around anymore. So I gave her the £10, and then later on, I paid for something, or my dad paid for something. And he got that £10 back. So we'd all paid for something, but that £10 had never left the front
never
room.
Moved. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a scathing kind of examination of the bartering system in general. Like, and how
it's absolutely bizarre that, like, so I could owe my dad £10. My dad could owe my sister £10. So I give my dad £10, and then he hands that same £10 off to my sister, and then my sister like buys something off me for £10 and gives me that same £10 back, and like three transactions that have taken place, and I've bought something off my sister, but it's the same £10 that never left the front room. That's just gone round.
No one owes
anyone any money, but this piece of paper has changed hands three times.
The amount of people that use cash as an opportunity to offload mountains of change on me.
It's all those pockets, Mark.
I think that's what it is. They just see me. Oh, you might as well just pay
the target on your back.
A tube of 2p pieces.
Yeah. Look at him in church with his hands in his pocket all the time. It must be really deep.
Jingling his change.
You need something to jangle there, mate.
That's a euphemism, isn't it? Look at him stood there jangling his change. I can't hear anything, but his face is distorted in pleasure.
Yeah. It's some kind of morbid rictus of coinage. That can be the name of our bank or our slogan. The morbid rictus of coinage.
MRC.
I think I'm going to have to start to the point where I've even considered getting one of those, like, if such a thing exists, and maybe this is our solution, you know, one of those touch things you pay for money, a touch
Contactless.
Contactless.
Thank you. It's actually the complete opposite of touch, isn't it, Matt? Yeah, because it's called contactless. Oh, don't even get me started on people that fucking touch the machine with their contactless card.
I feel like you're really nitpicking there's a lot that to be angry
it's called
about.
It's called contactless. Why are you touching the machine with your card?
I'm with you there, Nick. And they press it on really hard as well.
Fucking
just
rubbing
to make
it on.
Sure. Yeah, rub it. Oh, yeah. Get the coronavirus germs on there.
Exactly.
That's an interesting thing, though, because you're blaming the user. That must be, I would say, is an inherent problem with the design of the way the system's presented.
Well,
to them.
I can relate to that because I never understand whoever designed the contactless card machines is a total idiot. Because
no
why
offense,
would
mate.
You? Yeah.
Again, not listening to this podcast.
Yeah, not listening. The guy who sued Domino's.
But why would you design something where you cover up the feedback display?
Yeah.
Why would you?
That must be a nightmare
pisses
for,
me off.
For blind people as well, contactless payment.
Well, yeah. But that's.
You do get a little bit of feedback and you just get. Yeah. But yeah, you kind
well,
of.
Well, finding
like, yeah.
the machine. In the first instance, it's going to be easy.
Pin the tail on the donkey.
At least if you've got to put your card in a slot, you can physically find the slot, whereas the contactless thing is just like a label that's printed onto the machine, isn't it?
But of course, Nick's saying this, and the last time a blind person accidentally touched his contactless card to the machine, he just pushed him out of the way and
just drop-kicked him.
Idiot!
When I get the chance to use contactless, I always use my phone because I get that haptic feedback.
Oh, I use my watch because I'm a douchebag.
Yeah.
Me too.
So
especially in Aldi,
you're not willing to excuse people touching the machine, but you're willing to have to gesticulate round your wrist in some great arc.
So I wear my watch on my left hand, and when you go through McDonald's, it's the most awkward fucking thing. It's got to the point now where as I'm waiting in the queue at McDonald's, I'll switch my watch into my right hand.
Going back to complex systems for a minute, there,
Nick. Yeah, McDonald's drive-thru. Yeah. Do you know what? If you're using McDonald's drive-thru, you deserve everything you get.
Well, what is it? Yeah.
Which is, you know, heart disease, diabetes.
Cold chips. Burgers,
cold chips.
Cold chips, yeah. Yeah. Spots.
Yeah,
short-term problems as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you eat enough McDonald's, they become short-term problems very quickly.
Well, this is true. Yeah, it's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
Right. Anyway, do you have any notes that you want to wrap up, Mark? Because my computer's about to die, and we're over
in 2 seconds speed. Yeah,
I think we've now got MCR FHC Bank. So it's MCR Bank.
That's catchy. Love to see the marketing. Love to see the marketing people on that SEO. at least the domain name's available.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And will remain so.
Faster horses coin. Here for your morbid rictus banking. Faster
horses coin. Two outmoded ideas in one. Well, thanks for listening to our two listeners, which is essentially me in the future and begrudgingly my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Definitely not your mum.
Yeah. No, definitely not my mum. I hope she doesn't listen to this one in particular because I've moaned about her like 3 times.
Yeah. Oh dear. No more pocket change will be circulated in that living room.
And then we'll just cut it there.
Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening to Faster Horses, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks very much and see you soon. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter at Faster Horses UX.